You may not feel like a pilgrim this morning, but can I assure you that you are, all of you, and me. And the theme of pilgrimage is common to all faiths and to all denominations. So I sat down and sucked my pencil and try not to stab myself and thought, why is that? And I came up with, well, four reasons, very briefly. And the first is actually sentiment. It's as simple as that. It's part of who we are as human beings. If I can just give you an example. In 2016, Joan and I went on a Baltic cruise. I really can recommend it. I know some of you have. And getting to St. Petersburg was an eye-opener, but since I was a history teacher and I taught not only Russian history, I taught history of the First World War as well, which has been the end of which is being commemorated this year, of course, this Remembrance Sunday next week. We passed over the exact spot. You're probably going to think I'm going to mention the killing fields, as it were. But on the 31st of May, 2016, some of you will know what I'm going to refer to, we passed over the exact spot where exactly 100 years before British and German battle fleets encountered in what became known as the Battle of Jutland. The Germans called it Skagerrak, where nearly 8,000 men and boys lost their lives. And I found that intensely moving. That here we are, exactly 100 years later, on this very spot of water. And then we made a trip ashore to the Flanders fields and visited some of the war graves at Tyne Cot. See, a pilgrimage in a slightly different sense, but again, moved by sentiment, genuine sentiment. And Tyne Cot, as many of you know, commemorates not just thousands of lives, but millions who were killed in the First World War, including, incidentally, two of my relatives, a Martin and a George Tabraham, whose names I'd actually discovered in the Imperial War Museum a little earlier, but whose names are then inscribed there on the Menin Gate. And then on a lighter note, Joan and I made a pilgrimage a couple of years ago to Barbados. Well, for me it was a pilgrimage, as a lifelong lover of cricket, to sit in the Kensington Oval, you know, and to sit at Wes Hall's side on his settee in his room, shake his hand and give him a hug, was amazing. But to be there at the Kensington Oval was just something so, so special. Just a thought, I wondered on each occasion, was I being in danger of becoming a tourist rather than a pilgrim? It's an interesting thought, isn't it? Well, there's sentiment, and in addition to sentiment, there's history. And I'm not thinking of history in the academic sense, but rather our tradition, the need to find out and to celebrate who we are. You'll know, perhaps, that I'm a heritage steward at Wesley's Chapel and the Museum of Methodism in City Road in London. And over 17,000 people came last year, and the number's going up. Every year creeps up by about 1,000. Extraordinary, really. But the most moving part is, well, for me and for many people, is when I take folk round John Wesley's house. We go and see the little annex. He had an extension built, rather ugly extension actually, but a tiny little extension, a room half the size of your minister's vestry, where he used to go 4 o'clock in the morning and pray. And to see people from the other side of the world, because even if numbers of Methodists are declining, raw numbers are declining in this country. They're growing worldwide. There's 80 million of us. And to see and to meet people from Fiji and Brazil and Methodists from Portugal and the United States and Germany, Russia, South Africa, and you name it. And they go into that little room and tears flow, and they're there at that little desk where he knelt and prayed every morning so that his day would start on the right foot. So it's lovely that you're having these evening or late afternoon services, 5 o'clock, where you meet to pray. And you'll know that there are other Methodist heritage centres. I haven't been to the Primitive Methodist Museum at Anglesey Brook in Cheshire, I confess, but I've been to the Epworth Rectory, Lincolnshire, and I've been to the New Room in Bristol. And we have a Methodist Heritage Handbook, which is published every year, which somebody said, and I rather like the analogy, is almost the equivalent to John Wesley riding around the country on horseback, disseminating news. This is what Trinity News and Views does, and all, the Way Forward magazine. But as Methodists, we value these, not in any strident way, but because we value and cherish and need to keep in touch with our roots. And just very briefly, two other reasons why we go on pilgrimages. One, perhaps not so common in Methodism, but certainly in other denominations, is to venerate saints. People go, mostly Roman Catholics, to Lourdes. Muslims go to Mecca. Jews, and Christians go to Jerusalem. And then fourthly, apart from these reasons, there is a powerful driving force in general of what I would call devotion. Joan and I, my wife Joan and I, for those who don't know us, try every year to go to Swansea, to her parents' grave, where we leave some flowers, tidy it up a bit, and say some short prayers. Now, devotion expressed in that way is very, very common. And I can tell by your faces that, you know, that is very common for you all. The notion of pilgrimage and sacred places can't be overestimated. And we'll each have our own favourites. Not just secular landmarks, but spiritual places which have a spiritual significance for us. For some, it will be, for example, Iona. I went to Iona with Jonah on a very blustery day, and we barely got across the channel from the mainland of Mull, the sea going up and down. And Joan swore she would never go on water again when she changed her mind, thank goodness. And Paul, our son Paul, had a very fruitful week's retreat a number of years ago. There's Bardsey Island, where people go. St. David's in West Wales. I'm sure Gareth can tell you all about that. Canterbury, places of spiritual significance or importance which help us get in touch with the God who is invisible yet ever so close to us all. And you'll have your own special places. What about here? What about here? I suggested a moment ago that there are four reasons why people of all denominations and faiths find pilgrimage to a special place important: sentiment, to celebrate one's tradition, to venerate particular saints, and also as an act of devotion. Can I suggest a fifth reason, which might resonate with us as Methodists more in 2018 than perhaps any of the four that I've mentioned already? the need to have a place, to find a place for quiet reflection and prayer. And I do believe, in my experience, there's an increasing demand for this. And I think every church can offer something as a sacred place. And I think it means that we have to ask ourselves questions as a Christian community. How can we, in your case here at Trinity Methodist Church, how can you help people to be pilgrims in their journey of faith, which may be very different from yours? And that's one of the most challenging things I found when I was in the so-called active ministry. Never discovered what that was. The active ministry as to how I could help people find God and draw closer to God and have a pilgrimage of faith in terms which was very different from mine, using prayers and words and music and a spirituality with which I was not familiar, but which, as certainly as a minister, we're all ministers. All ministers just mean servant, and this collar doesn't mean that I'm that different from any of you. How can we enable people to find God in their way, to enable him to speak to them? What's special about this church for us? Is it right that we give our buildings the attention that we do? Personally, I think yes, because every church building is a physical witness to the presence of a Christian congregation. I mean, I'm not saying take this from the sublime to the ridiculous, but think on a grand scale. If you've ever been to Lincoln Cathedral, which was from when it was built in, I think, the 14th century, certainly for 200 years, was the tallest building on this planet. You go in, and you take the route that the pilgrims took through the nave towards the transept, symbolizing the outstretched arms of Christ welcoming you through into the chancel and then onto the altar. And that represented one's eternal destination, if you like, a replica of life as a pilgrimage. And, you know, that came to mind. And then I thought, well, I know what they'll be thinking. Yes, that's all very well, Barry, but most Methodist churches aren't as grand as that, and certainly not the same shape, and certainly Trinity, which is octagonal, is certainly not in that shape. Thank goodness, I love the shape of this church. And you'll also be saying to yourself, well, some churches were built to the glory of individuals rather than the glory of God. And you'd be absolutely right. I come from South Wales, and I'm well familiar with huge buildings built ridiculously close to others in denominational rivalry up and down the valleys. And you could see huge edifices just 100 or so yards from one another, and never more than half full, quarter full, despite what people claim. And even in my last circuit, when I was a super, the Wimbledon circuit, we had a lovely church up at Tooting. You had to go right past massive Tooting Methodist Church to get to it, which is in a different circuit, and built because two rather wealthy figures quarrelled, and one decided to build a church. His nose was put out of joint, so he left and built a church and took lots of people with him, and then you had two for the price of one, perhaps, but very silly and unnecessary. But because we have become more and more a secular society, we do need islands of holiness, as I would call them, islands of holiness, a place like this where people can come. And I never cease to wonder at the number of people, a lot of whom are not churchgoers necessarily, who drift into our churches. Seen it time and time and time again, often during evening service, services which are less formal, perhaps therefore more accessible, smaller numbers, so less threatening, maybe, but nevertheless provide a ministry. And if our buildings are to be a physical witness, then they need to be maintained, they need to be warm and comfortable. The old pews, which were made really so that, well, firstly to keep out drafts and secondly to pack in more people, are now thankfully replaced by chairs. I never did manage to get rid of the pews. I think it was Mike Long who did that, or Bob. But anyway, you've done it. And this is lovely to provide the flexibility and the comfort that worship, modern worship, needs. But it doesn't mean that the old has to be jettisoned. At Wesley's Chapel, where there have been lots and lots of new things, and the museum underneath is brand spanking new. It really is an incredible place. I do warmly invite you to visit. It's a wonderful place, very, very, very modern indeed. But next door, we have some of the oldest toilets in working order in this country. Perfect. Built, I have to say, and I'm not kidding you, by Thomas Crapper and Son. Absolutely wonderful. Wonderful. I love. You do get one or two people go, ooh. And if we preserve and cherish the best of the old while exploring new ways to enable our buildings to meet the needs of the present age, then people will take us seriously. And of course, just finally, it's more than buildings, as we all know. As a Christian community, we are islands of holiness. We are the resource for others. We can be a community of faith which welcomes people, no matter what their background, now what their style of worship or their spirituality, their tradition, or, I have to say, even their motive. And you're just going to look at some of the New Testament stories of how Jesus picked out the marginalized, the people with a tiny, tiny little bit of faith. Maybe it was superstition. The woman touching the hem of his garment. Zacchaeus, the cheat, the real bandit, real sharp character who climbs a tree. All kinds of people on the edge. Not your traditional churchgoer. We can be a resource that enables others to fulfill their desire to be pilgrims. And in a world where a lot of people have lost their sense of direction, it's up to us as Christians to help people rediscover the notion of an intentional journey, a pilgrimage. And the reason is that a Christian pilgrimage is a microcosm of a longer journey, isn't it? We go to Teze, or we go to Iona, go to Lourdes, go to Canterbury. Those pilgrimages are a microcosm, a small-scale example of a wider journey, the journey of life, which is the greatest pilgrimage of all. And I pray, quite simply, that may God give you and I the wisdom and the grace to enable others to walk with our Lord as we walk with him. Thanks be to God.